Hello and welcome to Backyard Catch. This is Nick Roby, and we have a special episode coming to you today. We have the founder and runner of Pick Six Previews, Brett Zancia, is coming to us, get to talk all things college football. Brett has been running this preview for a long time. I've actually kind of got started into it, Brett, as we're introducing this, when you were doing a radio hit for 105.5 The Roar when you were with William Quackenbush. That's how I kind of got known to you. So, and I've been a big fan since. So one, thanks for being on. I know this time of year is pretty crazy for you, but it's a great time of year. But how are you doing? And I appreciate you being on.
Yeah, well, thanks, Nick, for having me on. And it's great to be partnering up with Backyard Catch this year, and hope that it's a huge season for you. Yeah, it's a busy time for sure with the Preview Magazine going live mid-July. It's a one-man show. I'm writing, editing, and publishing it. So once that goes out mid-July, then it turns into radio podcast season. So these 6 weeks between the release of the mag and then season kickoff, it's as many shows and podcasts as I can get on. So making the tour, you know, but it's great to be on. And yeah, there's a lot to break down this year because it's a season of change. You got the playoff tripling in size, you got all the conference realignment, the transfer portal game. So a lot to break down. Excited to be on.
No, I really appreciate it. Yeah, we'll get into it. But this year is a little bit weird with the playoff and just we're talking about auto bids and just a lot. I know for you, a lot I want to kind of just pick your brain about and just factoring in. But before we get into that, and maybe just start for some people who are maybe like, I feel like in this online world, continuing to discover these different options that are out there. Just kind of one, what was a little bit of the background of just you getting into doing the magazine and just like, what have you enjoyed and just what's this process been like for you just doing the magazine?
Yeah, well, born and raised here in Eastern Pennsylvania, really a pro sports area, but me and my father loved college football. So that it was really born out of a passion of college football. You know, Saturdays were special. They were unique. So I have a love of college football. I'm a numbers guy, and then naturally those two passions led me to create some formulas and some ways of predicting games that were really working. I always read all the college football preview magazines. I think it's a really great product, an annual product, and I started to notice that I wish I could have had more info in there, you know, things that I found relevant that some of the magazines weren't putting in there. So I basically just started from scratch and figured what's interesting to me as a college football fan to have in a magazine. And I just started compiling, all my formulas, my advanced metrics, but then my stat graphics and putting it all together into a readable format for the reader. And I also wanted to do a deeper dive than what you usually get in magazines. Started this thing in 2012. And the predictions have been graded the most accurate in the country in the last 10 years. So that's really a point of pride for me. It's a one-man show, like I said, going up against these legacy brands that have 100, 200 writers and staff and editors. Once I found out they were keeping score, that was it. I'm really competitive. So, I go in search of every data point I can find. I'm watching spring games. I'm talking to head coaches, coordinators, running my numbers, really digging in position by position. And it's a very exhaustive process, but it's out of a love of college football. Love of, I guess, numbers and sports rating, putting it all together. So that's how it started. That's how it's been going. It's the third year with the hard copy. I transitioned off of digital only to put out a real hard copy magazine. And I think that's helped it grow even more. It's, I think there's something to be said about a tangible hard copy preview annual, bring it to the lake, bring it to the beach, have it on the couch on Saturday mornings. I get that we're in a digital world now, but I still think for some reasons, the annual product like that is still good for hard copy. So yeah, it's been great. It's been really busy, and I'm excited to kick the season off.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love hearing that. And it really is such a what I love about, especially with college sports, is it's such a relational piece of it. And I will say, and fun fact, I actually really have your tangible magazine right here. I am a big fan of,
there it is. Yep.
And so if you wanted to see it, this is what it is. Pick Six Previews. Brett does an excellent job. And yeah, I love having both. I love that you had that option too, because I am a tangible. I like having the digital whenever you go, but having a tangible, just something you can feel and kind of flip through, especially as you're, and now we're starting to watch games or being, you know, just feel more educated on. I'm just kind of curious too, before we get into all the nuts and bolts of the actual season, just like kind of you're kind of hitting on a little bit, but just what's your process like without giving away the, you know, without, as they say, giving away the farm or any of your, like secrets per se, but just like, what's this process for you like, and like putting all this information in here for the public and for people, you know, like me who are trying to be, like who are analysts and trying to be ready for the season, or like just a fan wanting to know about their team. Like, what's that process for like for you?
Yeah, well, I go team by team. It's all 70 Power Four teams, and it's a one man show. So I'm digging into every single team. I'm reading all their game recaps. Like I said, talking to coaches, talking to coordinators, watching spring games, practice clips, practice notes, off season content, talking to local media that are covering on the ground there. Another thing that that I do is I really ignore the other national sources, and it's not an arrogance thing. It's just that I don't want to cloud my judgment with other opinions. You know what I mean? I want to come at this thing with an original thought, an authentic voice. You know what I mean? And then, you know, once it's published, then of course I catch up and see what everyone else is picking and all that. But I really try and keep it local. You know, go to the source directly. People that are on the ground watching these teams in spring ball and fall camp, go to those sources. What else? Yeah. So I think what makes my magazine stand out is the balance I try and strike between the advanced numbers, but then also the storyline of each program.
Yeah.
Cause I think if you're too heavy in one or the other, you know, some magazines might have just a lot of like acronyms and a lot of computer code. It's hard to read. And it might have good numbers, but it's just hard to read. And then others might be the complete opposite, where it's just, kind of storyline fluff. And with having one writer per team, every team is the best on earth. You know what I mean? What I do is, I have the numbers there on the left side of the page. I have my graphics so you can see the underlying data, but then on the right side of the page, putting it back into readable format, tell the storyline of these programs, you know, coaching schemes, recruiting strategies, all the personnel, all the transfer movement. So then to talk process, yeah, it's really a 12-month thing. In the fall on Saturdays, I have my four TV screens up for 14 hours, really from noon till 2 a.m., taking in as much as I can live. Sunday, Monday, going back, seeing condensed games, looking at notes. But then fast forward until the national title game, that's really when the magazine process starts. I'm able to then run my season-long numbers and get the graphics going. There's a huge transfer portal window after the season, so that's one big piece. Then the NFL draft decision piece. Recruiting signing day. And then of course you get into spring ball, talking to coaches, and then starting to write this thing. And you know, it's funny. I mean, I write all 70 teams and then I print it to paper and then I sit in the chair next to me and I become the editor. You know what I mean? I got to turn around and edit my own work and then I go in the next chair and I'm the designer. So it's a lot of different hats, but, you know, I'm kind of a control freak. I like doing it all myself and it's an authentic product. So, really long process. Long-winded answer there, but there's no way to shortchange it. And that gets us up to mid-July when I hit release and publish it.
Yeah. No. I think it's a great answer. And then it's something that it interests me because like we see a physical product or we see like a final copy and we're given picks and giving things out, but we don't always get to see all the work that goes into that or just how much detail and how much, especially when you're like a lone man person, which I can definitely appreciate. There's a lot of work that goes into it and a lot of hours and man hours that not always get to be seen. So no, I really appreciate that and definitely value. And I look forward to whenever your stuff comes out just to kind of see like how it kind of hits compared to the national different media that are talking for sure. So, yeah. But let's get into it. You know, football season is almost here. So let's talk through some conference champ picks. And so it's important with this too. And if you're kind of getting back into the college football realm, like listening, of course we're going to a 12-team playoff now and there's four automatic qualifiers and then a non-power five or now non-power four, team that will get a conference champ automatically in there. So figure we can kind of go through each conference and kind of just talk through just how you kind of got to each of those teams and who your picks are going to take up those those four spots. So we can start whichever conference you want, but I figure we could talk through the conference champs first.
Yeah, sure. And I'll start with two of more of the chalk picks. It's Georgia out of the SEC and Ohio State out of the Big Ten. And those are very popular picks. They're the heavy favorites in those leagues. And I agree in those cases. I think what you have there are two super rosters, really dynasty tier teams, where they're the top recruiters in the country from the high school level. They supplement it with really strong transfer classes, good coaches, good schemes. And then what stands out about these two this year is that usually these dynasty type teams like Bama, Georgia, Ohio State, Clemson back in the day, they cycle through their players quicker than others because they're the early entrants into the NFL draft. So they'll be on campus 3 years and gone. So usually returning starter numbers are down for these types of teams. But this year for Georgia and Ohio State, they bring everybody back. It's really high returning production numbers, more than usual, especially Ohio State. I mean, the whole defense decided to come back to Columbus instead of go to the NFL draft. So I really love both of these teams. They also both have that motivation card, that intangible of Georgia missing on a third straight national title. They're hungry again. And then Ohio State has that Michigan problem lurking there in late November, where they've lost three straight to Michigan and seen them win the conference three times straight, and then last year hoist the national title trophy. So all kinds of intangibles are pointing towards Ohio State. And so those are my two picks from those leagues, a little bit of chalk. But the other two are maybe a little bit more shocking. Utah out of a really crowded Big 12. They're my pick there. They're, of course, coming into this new expanded league. And when you look at their stat chart on paper, you would think it's a crazy pick because it's all red indicating bottom 100 numbers and stuff like that on offense. But you got to dig into the storyline here. And it's probably the most injured team I've ever seen in covering college football. Most injuries. Went back and tracked it. 157 games were lost to injury last year from their two team. And that's talking starting quarterback, backup QB, third QB. You go all the way down the list. They were playing their fifth string quarterback. They had a safety taking some quarterback snaps in the Wildcat. So long story short, I think you get a boomerang effect here where you get all those injured stars back healthy in the lineup. And then all those young guys that were thrown into action last year ahead of schedule, they're now veterans. So a really, really experienced roster, a lot of All-American potential, proven coaching staff, physical style play. I like Utah to emerge there. And I guess that leaves us with the ACC. And this one's a little bit of a shock pick too, it turns out. I went with Miami out of a three-team race in the ACC between Clemson, Florida State, and Miami. I went with the Canes, and this gets a lot of flack, a lot of pushback, because it's one of those programs that has underachieved the last 10, 20 years. It's like a Texas, it's like a USC, where they recruit well, they have all the hype, and then they come up short. But I do think it's a little different this time based on two factors. One, their offensive line. Mario Cristobal, he has some in-game issues with coaching, but there's no doubt he can develop an offensive line, and they're looking really stout there. And the number two is just the talent acquisition. It's all about getting players in the door, and they're the only team in America to stack top 10 high school classes in the last 2 years and top 10 transfer halls the last 2 years. So they really flipped over the whole roster into a top 10 team, and I see them emerging in a three-way race.
Yeah, I love it. No, so if you hadn't heard all that, we're just catching back up. It's Georgia for the SEC, Ohio State Big Ten, Utah new in the Big 12, and then Miami in the ACC. I feel you both on Georgia and Ohio State, and especially with Ohio State, they have so much. I'd be very curious to see how Will Howard does the Kansas State transfer for them. And I just, I guess, and with Utah, I'm really, with Cam Rising coming back, I can really see that. I guess we can kind of get into more of just your playoff. Oh, I guess we should hit also too your non-automatic qualifier, who you have the G5 team that you have coming out and what kind of made that team stand out first before we jump into the playoff.
Yeah, so this is a whole new feature in the playoff, is that the committee is going to honor the highest ranked non-AQ conference champion with an automatic bid. And we don't know how they're going to treat that. If they're going to strictly just pick the undefeated conference champ, even if it comes from a weaker conference. I'm thinking here in this example of a Liberty, who has the easiest schedule in America by the numbers.
Right.
So if they go 13-0, how does that stack up against a 12-1 Boise State, who is in a harder league than Mountain West and has to play Oregon in week two, a playoff contender themselves. So ultimately, I went with, I think they're going to value the Boise State scenario more. A team that's been through a couple ranked games, you know, maybe they lose to Oregon, but that's a top 10 team. So I went with Boise State. You know, they're a really proven product. They're defending Mountain West champs. And I think they emerge out of what I think is the strongest non-AQ conference. But we'll see about that one. We have no idea how the committee is going to value such a new topic. So your guess is as good as mine with that one.
No, yeah. I mean, that's kind of what it, that is one of the most interesting parts of this whole process when it comes to the playoff, is because they added that in there, which on one hand you can understand, but when you're trying to do a preview or make predictions, like it adds a whole other wrinkle because of what you were just talking about. I wanted to make sure we get back to two, because I live in ACC country. So I live in South Carolina, and, you know, a lot of Clemson fans here. So, and then you have, of course, like, you know, the Carolinas, we're next to Georgia. And so the Miami, Florida State, Clemson piece of it, I kind of just want to pick your brain a little bit more. Like, you have Miami and all this talent coming in for them, you know, and I can definitely see them winning the conference. I think the question, like you were talking about, like, will it all come together? What made them stand out to you more than, say, Florida State or Clemson, or even like a Virginia Tech, or I've even heard SMU, you know, people are like, what do you do with SMU? And all, you know, another new team in, like, what differentiated out Miami between like Florida State and Clemson?
Yeah, well, I think there's great arguments for each. With Miami, first, statistically, this is a team that I was surprised when I ran my numbers. They really popped off the charts better statistically than their record showed. They were top 20 on both my offense and defense opponent-adjusted stats. And you look at how they started out. They had a big win over Texas A&M. They started 6-2, beat Clemson. And then their quarterback had some injuries and went into a funk, Tyler Van Dyke. They lost three straight there late in the year, so... I don't know. And, but I really like what they upgraded at quarterback, bringing in the top transfer quarterback, from Washington State, the top running back transfer, Damian Martinez from Oregon State, transfers really all over the place. So I went with a talent pick there, a raw talent pick. But then when you look at the other contenders, they're right there. Florida State, I really like what Mike Norvell does in the transfer portal. The most 4- and 5-star transfers from the portal in the country in the last 2 years. He continues to do it. It's just too much of a transitional type thing for me. They lose 7 starters off the defense, quarterback, both running back, both receivers. You know, you go down the list, it's all new faces. And I don't know that I trust DJU as much to win a conference like that. So I have them too. Clemson, they're the complete opposite, because they're really strong at the high school recruiting level, top 5 in the 5-year average. But then nothing from the portal. So, and I know this is a hot topic, and you know, I'm as traditional and old fashioned as anybody. But I think the transfer game, I think we need to embrace it, because you know, just say you sign 20 players in a recruiting class, and say you know, 5 of them are a miss, and everyone's going to have recruiting misses. But at other places like Florida State and Miami, they're backfilling those 5 missed opportunity spots with proven all conference guys from across the country that have proven at the college level. They're backfilling, they're supplementing, or even upgrading. But with Clemson, they're leaving themselves thin there. Those 5 misses, they stay. And then the next 5 from the next class, they stay. They're not being upgraded. So I like his old-fashioned mentality, but I think they need to hit that portal a little bit. So I have them third. And yeah, some of your dark horse picks I like. Virginia Tech's very veteran. If that's your stat you like, the returning starters number, that's your pick, because I think they're number 1 in the country in returning starters. And tough physical identity. SMU making the jump up from non-AQ to the ACC, I think, is going to be a tougher transition than most are expecting. But yeah, it's a very intriguing league. It feels weird to be talking SMU and Cal and Stanford on the East Coast, but
so weird.
That's just the era we're living in. But it's going to be exciting.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. Yeah, and I totally see all that, and I'm totally following. Okay, let's get in more of your playoff. I mean, you can kind of just break down maybe like 1 through 12 and just kind of how the matchups you kind of see working for your playoff.
Yeah, so we start with those 4 automatic bids, like we said, the conference champ winners. And then from there, I started to think about conference strength, because I think the committee is going to value the stronger conferences runners up more than some of the weaker leagues. I think we've seen that over the last 10 years of the playoff bracket, where the SEC was able to get 2 into the 4-team bracket. several times. The Big Ten got it once, and the ACC and Big 12 did not. So from that framework, I have the SEC getting four teams in, the Big Ten getting three. I have two ACCs in there, and then just Utah from the Big 12. So when you break it down that way, it just basically becomes your conference rankings. So in the SEC, I have Georgia winning it. I have Ole Miss and Texas as the runner-ups, and then Alabama in the fourth spot. And I think all four of them make the bracket there at 10-2 or 11-1. From the Big Ten, I have Ohio State winning it. I've got Oregon number two, Penn State three over Michigan. And that's one you see a lot of pundits having Michigan. I'm fading them this year, just given how much they lost. So yeah, those are the three from the Big Ten. The ACC, I see both Miami and Florida State getting bids. And then the last wild card would be Notre Dame, I have getting a spot, because I think that's a really strong team. And I think they go 11-1 with a very manageable schedule. So at least 10-2, which I think still 10-2 probably gets them in the bracket. So then to summarize it up, I tried to, you know, the committee won't have this luxury of just playing around with the seeding a little bit, because they're going to just do their numbers and run it. But I tried to avoid rematches, and it took me a while, because I think you're going to see a lot of rematches in the playoff bracket in future years. But for this prediction, I went and tried to avoid rematches. So I have Florida State going to Ole Miss. And remember, these first round games are hosted on campus. So Florida State in the Grove, that'll be pretty cool. I have Alabama heading up northwest to Oregon, Autzen Stadium. Penn State heading to South Bend, Indiana to face Notre Dame. And then the David versus Goliath matchup, the Boise State non-AQ bid going to Texas to play the Longhorns. So those would be the four on-campus matchups happening. One's Friday night, the 20th of December, and then triple header on the 21st Saturday. It's going to be electric to see those four campuses light up.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. And also, it'd be wild. Like, can we imagine whether or not you're on, like, not say you personally, but just whether somebody's on, like, board for the 12-team playoff or not. If Boise State goes in this, I'm just thinking about this. If they, you know, they have the famous win over Oklahoma. If they go to Austin to beat Texas to say they have wins over both teams, that just would be wild for them.
Yeah, it would be fitting for them to get the first non-AQ bid, the BCF Busters, as they're known as. That'd be pretty cool.
I know. That does feel right, and something feels just very poetic about that. I want to make sure we hit – maybe who are some other teams we haven't mentioned that maybe are like in your top 20, top 25 that maybe just missed out on a playoff, or you could see being like contenders, but maybe you just had – just falling just short a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think if you're talking SEC, they're going to get a lot of teams in. So who are those close SEC runner-ups? I have Tennessee right on the outside looking in. I love their offense under Josh Heupel. It's very hyper-tempo, as they call it. It's super fast. Now he's got a five-star arm with Nico in there throwing the ball. So five-star quarterback. But overlooked by them is their front seven is really strong and one of the best defensive lines in the country. James Pierce could be the number one overall pick next April in the 2025 draft. I think Tennessee is going to be a contender. A little bit off the grid here, I have Iowa 20th in the country, and that might not sound like a playoff team, but if you look at their schedule, and I know they'll lose to Ohio State, but from there, they might be favored in 10 or 11 games. So if there's a way for them to get to 10-2 out of the Big Ten, that actually becomes a playoff resume in this new expanded format. So with an elite defense and what should be somewhat of an improvement on offense with a new coordinator and quarterback, I think Iowa, I mean, if they go 10-2, they're going to be a contender. So there's two. A super wild card pick would be UCF. I think I'm the only magazine in the country that even has them on the radar. Most have them 9th or 10th within the conference. I have them 4th in the Big 12, 25th nationally. And yeah, they made their transition season last year and took some growing pains going from the non-AQ up to the Big 12, but they were close in a lot of games. Now they bring back everybody. They had record school record transfer class and high school class and big quarterback KJ Jefferson coming in from Arkansas. So those are some dark horses across the map, but I mean, we could go 2 hours talking about all kinds of dark horses. I love it. I find more joy in covering those teams than the chalky picks, but we'll see. Yeah, there's a lot of contenders now because you have that automatic path. You can go 9-3, but win your conference title and get in there.
Yeah, I know. Now I think that's what makes the whole dark horse conversation so much interesting, even more so with this playoff, because as you think about it, it's not just winning your league and trying to be one of those four teams. It's, you know, say like a team that I'm very interested in and I'm decently high on too is Virginia Tech, like we talked about, because they have that returning production. So say they make the conference title game, you know, if they lose, you know, say what they're, mm-hmm. you know, they end up being 10-3 even, but they make the conference title game. I mean, you still have a strong shot to make the playoff, and that would be massive for them. I guess I'm also just curious too, like how much when you're trying to factor in these like picks, like how much have you tried to approach like with the transfer portal? Like how much do you try to like, do you kind of just like try to just see like what new pieces are coming in? Like how big of a factor is that? Cause you have that as a part of, if you have the magazine, like Brett does a great job of breaking down recruiting rankings, but you also added a new piece, which I thought was cool too, of like where people ranked like transfer wise. Like how big of a factor has that been for you trying to like just navigate these teams and try to understand where they're at?
Yeah, Nick, well, I'll say it's really made it 10 times harder to produce this magazine. It's such a logistical nightmare. Not just the timing of it, because you have a window right after the season, but then they do that spring ball window where I might have a couple of first draft, second draft written, and then all of a sudden these star players are all hopping around in May. So it is crazy. But I think it's unavoidable. You have to really dig in. It's either all or nothing. You can just ignore it, or you can just dig in. And I dug in and really have to go player by player. And it's very exhaustive. It takes forever. But really you look at, okay, where'd the player come from? Was he a starter there? Was he a backup? Why is he transferring? You know, what was his high school rank? All that kind of stuff. And vice versa for players that are departing. You know, were they actually starters? Or did they lose their starting job and the transfer departure doesn't hurt as much? So really it becomes a position by position game, all 70 teams. But you're right. I tried to give the reader more info there with the talent acquisition graphic. I used to just have the 5-year high school recruiting, and that's still in there. But this year I added the last couple transfer class ranks along with the number of 4- and 5-star transfers, because a team like Ohio State, they might only add 5 transfers and therefore their class might be ranked, say, 30th. But if you look at it on a quality, not quantity thing, they have some of the most blue chips coming in. So. And then the last bit I added was the 2025 mock NFL draft, the consensus there to see how many draftable prospects. I know we're still a year away from that, but just as an extra info piece there, you can see how many draftable players they have and how they rank. So it's really changed a lot. I also put in an all transfer team. It sounds silly, but you know, you have your all ACC, all Big Ten. I put all transfer now, just to see the best at each position coming into each conference. So try and give the reader, you know, a shorter guide to all the player movement that's happened. A couple of graphics can help there, and I hope that was helpful for everybody.
No, I think it's great, and as somebody, it's a lot to keep up with, and I think it's helpful to know like just what people are coming in, and I agree. Just wanted to pick your brain about that. I totally agree. So as we're wrapping up, I know you are a very highly sought out interview these days, which I can totally appreciate. One final thought, or just one thing I wanted to give you, maybe just the floor. Is there anything just about your magazine or about your process that you enjoy or like, that you just wanted to share that we haven't gotten to talk about? Like you have like a game grader and different like formulas that you use, and all these different numbers, but are there particular like stats like that you get really excited to see, or is there like a different aspect that you just really enjoy as a part of this process?
Yeah, well, a couple things. I like the formula stuff. Like I said, I'm a numbers guy. I like visually being able to compare them across conferences, across divisions, and doing it that way. I like my opponent adjusted numbers. You know, beating Alabama by 50 is a little bit different than beating Vandy by 50. So opponent adjustments are important for me. So those are probably my favorite ones. The more opponent adjusted per play metrics, a little bit deeper, but an easy way, a quick glance to compare teams. But my favorite parts of the process are probably getting to talk to the head coaches, and I don't tape it. I don't publish it. So it actually lets them loosen up a little bit. They don't have to be doing their politician coach speak. So they can really just talk X's and O's or, you know, some funny recruiting stories and stuff like that. And, you know, I haven't gotten to talk to all of them yet, but it's a good chunk of them. So, it's rewarding when the season starts and I'm sitting there watching all these games and I can, you know, put a face to a name or think about a talk we had, and really makes me feel like I'm part of a little bit inside behind the curtain kind of thing. So it makes for a really fun experience. And the last thing I'll say about running a preview magazine, with predictions and then knowing that it's being graded and having the standings against my competitors, it makes it like one, you know, 4 month long March Madness bracket. If you can think of it, everyone has a bracket where you're watching every game matters a little bit for that bracket and all the points. Mm-hmm. Basically, that's what it's like for me every Saturday, the entire season, because all of these conference games are factored into the formula for accuracy ratings for the magazine. So it'll be a random Wednesday night and the MAC is playing and it's like, okay, I got some stake in this game. You know, the other magazines have Akron, I've got Ball State. So it's just such a fun experience and to go up against the other legacy brands and really have every game mattering. So that's what I'm really most looking forward to, along with all the newness with the playoff bracket and the realignment. But really excited for the season to kick off.
Yeah. No, I love it. Well, Brett, thank you so much for being on. I could sit here and talk to you for a long time, but I know that you got other interviews and other stuff in mind to sell the magazine. So the best place to go is picksixpreviews.com to still get the digital magazine.
Yeah, for sure. Picksixpreviews.com. It's the only place to get the magazine. We have the hard copy that Nick was showing there on camera. Mm-hmm. Still shipping out. Guaranteed 2-day shipping. I know we're getting close to kickoff, but we can get that to you immediately. And then also, when you buy the hard copy, we extend the digital, a complimentary copy of the digital. So for those 2 days that it's in, you know, USPS transit, you get the digital. So on there, we got testimonials. We got sample pages so you can see the level of detail that I go into. Mm-hmm. So thanks for having me on. Good luck this season with Backyard Catch. And we'll be in touch on Twitter and throughout the season. So good luck to you guys.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, and it's Pick Six Previews on Twitter. So thanks, Brett. I hope you enjoy the season, and I hope you enjoy the start of your March Madness bracket.
Yeah, for sure. All right. All right, thank you, Nick.